Owls in the Family, Chapter 10. 30 miles south of Saskatoon was a little village called Dundurn. It consisted of a garage, a couple of houses, and 2 red wooden grain elevators. Between Dundurn and the Saskatchewan River was a huge expanse of virgin prairie, and right in the middle of it was a slough so big it was almost a real lake, even though the water wasn't very deep. The lake was about the best place for ducks and geese and other water birds in the whole of Saskatchewan. The reed beds along its shore were full of yellow-headed blackbirds, bitterns, coots, and grebes. Out in the open water, you could sometimes see 200 or 300 families of ducks, mallards, pintails, shovelers, and lots of other kinds. Sometimes there were flocks of whistling swans, and in the autumn, so many geese stopped there to rest that they almost hid the water. Every summer, we used to camp for a couple of weeks near Dundurn in a 4-wheeled caravan my father had built, which we used to tow behind our Model A Ford. The caravan was fixed up like a little ship. It had ship's bunks, a ship's galley, which is what sailors call a kitchen, ship's lamps, and a ship's clock. On deck, the roof, there was even a little mast with a flag flying from it. People in Saskatoon used to call it Mowat's Prairie Schooner. On a stormy night when the wind made the caravan rock back and forth, you could lie snug in your bunk and find it hard to believe you weren't on a real schooner after all. Of course, whenever we took the caravan on a trip, Mutt and the owls had to come along. Our Ford was a convertible with a rumble seat. A rumble seat, something cars don't have anymore, was a sort of folding seat placed where the trunk is on a modern car. This was where Mutt, the owls, my friends and I used to ride. Mutt always rode with his head and front feet stuck way out over the side of the car, while Bruce or I held onto his tail so he wouldn't fall out on his nose. The owls used to perch on the back of the rumble seat, and they had to hang on for dear life. Because his eyes used to get sore from the dust of the prairie roads, Mutt had to wear goggles, the same kind that motorcycle riders wear. The sight of a goggled dog, 2-horned owls, and our prairie schooner used to make people in other cars take a long look at us as we went by. Sometimes they didn't believe their eyes, and then they would turn their cars around and follow us to make sure they hadn't been seeing things. During the second summer that the owls lived with us, we went to Dundurn for a camping trip. There was lots of water in the lake that year, and my father brought along his canoe, tied to the deck of the caravan. He paddled Bruce and me all around the lake looking at birds. We must have found 100 duck nests. And we even found the huge nest of a sandhill crane. The first few times we went out in the canoe, Wall came down to the shore to see us off, but he wouldn't come out canoeing with us. I think he still remembered the trouble he'd had with the Saskatchewan River at the cave, and he didn't trust water anymore. All the same, he hated to be left out of things. But when Weeps made up his mind to join us in the canoe one day, Wall got up his nerve and decided he'd come too. It wasn't a very big canoe, and by the time 2 boys, 1 man, 2 owls, and a dog had climbed in it, it was pretty crowded and pretty low in the water. We had to sit still as mummies. For a while, Dad paddled in the open lake, and then we began to explore the reed beds. Soon we came to a muskrat's house, with the nest of mallard ducks built on top of it. We had a look into the nest and were wondering how long it would be until the eggs hatched out when a crow came swooping over the marsh. He caught sight of our 2 owls and just about went crazy. He cawed and cawed until about 5 minutes the sky was black with crows. The more that came, the braver they all got, and soon they were diving down within a couple of feet of our heads. Dad tried to scare them away by waving his paddle and shouting, but by this time they were so excited they paid no attention to us. I guess no crows had ever caught a pair of owls at such a disadvantage before, and they were going to make the most of it. Weeps scuttled under my seat and hid between my legs, but Wall, who was perched on the bow of the canoe, wasn't going to run away. He kept getting madder and madder until he was hissing and clacking his beak in a perfect fury. This made the crows even more excited, and some of them dived so close the wind ruffled Wall's feathers. Finally, one crow came a bit too close. Suddenly, Wall spread his wings and jumped into the air, and at the same time he gave a short half-turn on his side and grabbed the crow with both sets of talons. There was an explosion of black feathers, and the crow went squawking off across the marsh, half naked. We didn't have time to watch him go. When Wall jumped, Bruce tried to catch him for fear he would fall in the water and be drowned. And that did it. Next second, all of us except Wall were in the lake. The water was only up to our knees, but the lake bottom was slimy black muck. As we scrambled to get hold of the canoe, Bruce and I and Dad got coated from head to foot with slime. Mutt, who had more sense than any of us, abandoned the canoe and headed for the muskrat house. Weeps, who must have thought this was the end, somehow managed to clutch hold of Mutt's tail and was towed to the muskrat house. Wall, who had been flying when the canoe upset and who could now couldn't find any place to land, kept circling over our heads, hooting at us to help him down. The crows were going wild. All the ducks and geese in the marsh were excited too. Now they started to quack and honk until there was such a row you couldn't have heard a cannon being fired. It took us nearly an hour to get back to shore. Dad pushed Bruce and me in the flooded canoe, somehow. Then he waded ahead, towing us. On the way, we stopped at the muskrat house and rescued Mutt and Weeps. Wall finally grew so tired that he had to land somewhere, and he flopped down on my father's head. This accident made us so angry with crows, any crows, that we would cheerfully have wrung the neck of every crow in Saskatchewan. Next morning, Dad got out his shotgun. He swore he was going to even up the score. He decided he would hide at the edge of the bluff near the lake where the crows used to gather and try to call them into range of his gun with a wooden crow call. Bruce and I and Wall went with him, but we stayed out of sight in the middle of the bluff while Dad tried to get the black devils, as he called them, to come close enough to be shot. But crows are wise birds in some ways. They can recognize a gun a long way off, and some of them must have spotted Dad's shotgun. He blew and blew on his crow call, but though there were lots of them around, they all stayed a healthy distance away. Eventually, Wall got bored, and first thing I knew, he had walked right out into the open and climbed up on a fence post. The crow call hadn't worked, but Wall sure did. As soon as they saw him, the crows forgot all about being cautious and about my father's gun. They gathered in clouds and began diving at Wall. Dad couldn't miss. His shotgun was banging so steadily it began to sound as if a war had started. After each shot, the surviving crows would climb out of range. Then Wall would begin flapping his wings and hooting insults at them, and they would forget about the gun again. The war with the crows lasted until Dad was out of ammunition. By then, there were a lot fewer crows around Dundurn. When we got back to camp, I was telling Mother about it, beginning with the way Wall had accidentally wandered out into the open. "Wandered out?" my father interrupted. "Don't you believe it. Wall knew what he was doing." And come to think of it, Dad was probably right.